Danil in the Kitchen talks about food. Danil in the Kitchen talks recipes. Danil in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Danil in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We gather here at the Danil in the Kitchen around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa, the center of Iowa, the center of it all. So we're kind of in the second week of the time of year that we refer to as pitching. It has nothing to do with baseball. No, it doesn't. Pitching has to do with we are trying to contact you as listeners and encourage you to become members of this radio station.
Right. This is an all-volunteer radio station and no advertising to the listeners. So we have to generate just enough income to kind of cover our expenses, and that does not include paying any of the volunteers who produce programs. It's just, you know, we require electricity and we do
have some very able staff people here too. Yeah. Great guys that keep everything going, because not everybody, well, Donna, we didn't come here knowing a whole lot about radio, so if it wouldn't be for all the help we've got,
we don't do the engineering.
Anyway, become a member. Go to khoifm.org/membership, and that will take you to the place where you can join this group. And if you are a member already, thank you for your support. Remember to keep renewing your membership.
Right, and we try to create our programming, especially on the Donna Lana Kitchen, to be useful for you, to have information about what you eat and how you take care of your physical well-being, because you're part of our community.
Right.
We care.
We care. We are here because we care. Well, things are green and growing today. We had quite a little rainstorm, and I guess more is coming today.
You want to know the bummer news about this?
What?
Well, you know, we've had a drought for a few years, yeah. So we're all rejoicing because we have rain, and boy, do we need it. But during the drought, a lot of the agricultural land around us was holding the nitrates in the soil, and now the rain is flushing it out. So there is a huge amount of nitrates in all of the rivers and streams right now, rushing down to add to the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico. Da 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 da.
We talk about this every year. It's like we talk about the weather, but nobody does anything about it.
Let's get on that one, Lana.
Right? Oh, dear. Oh, my. Well, let's think of all the rain and how, yes, it's good, but we have to be cognizant of what is
being flushed.
Well,
the weather didn't create the nitrates. Hello.
No, hardly. Hardly. This is
a man-made problem.
Yes, they are. Something to continue to work at and make noise about, too. Huh. Well, today on the Donna Lana Kitchen, despite all the nitrogen kind of floating around, there
nitrates are in the, okay.
There still are good things from the earth. My garden is so happy. My goodness, it's just although this time of year, you know, there's good and there's bad. I go out to work in my green and beautiful garden, and the past few days, I've had a close encounter with skunk smell. I mean, I haven't.
I smell them on my walk down by the Skunk River.
See, there you go. They must be out and about something.
Maybe it's breeding season. I don't usually smell them, but I got a whiff on my walk the other day, and I went, huh.
We forget, and then all of a sudden, well, we live here with other creatures, so that's out there.
They must
there
be
too.
Little, shy little guys. I never see them.
Hardly.
And Do you just smell them? You haven't seen them.
I've seen a few around the, you know, and the first thing
they're kind of cute.
The first thing you do when you see a skunk, oh, gosh, where's the dog? Oh, no. That's the first thing. Okay. Whew. Anyway, good things from the earth. Today we're going to talk about basil and green things to eat. Donna's going to tell us what switchel is, and another one of those words, and I'm going to be talking about mushrooms. But first, here's another thing about spring. It makes things grow. I'm going to ask him about lawn care. Mike, our engineer, Mike Murphy, has a sign out in front of KHOI Studios, and it says, No Mow May. Seems like a radical idea. Tell us about that, Mike.
Well, that sign covers a multitude of sins. That sign will placate the neighbors. I only became aware of this, I think, maybe last year or...
Last year it kind of took off.
And so we participated, and you put this sign on the lawn, and just don't mow. And, of course, May is a big growing season.
Yeah.
But it's great for the pollinators and to give them a jump start early on in the season, particularly bees, but other pollinators as well. And it's great... it's just all around great for the environment. And
so the virtue of not mowing in May is it gives more
stuff blooming.
More bloom, more pollination, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you give creatures a good shot early on, a head start, you know, early in the season.
Good excuse, right?
Yeah, it is.
And good for the earth. Remember, things like, I know there are grass purists out there, but many, many things can grow in your lawn, including dandelions and clover. They're all good, really, truly.
Even the Creeping Charlie is blooming a lot right now,
yeah.
So that must be for... I have a sign that came from the Xerxes Society, which is about bees, which I put up last fall, leave the leaves for the same reason. You know, let those leaves fall because a lot of bees kind of overwinter in all of that thing, you know, and it's, you know, then you don't have to go out and buy wood chips for mulching, for goodness sake.
Right.
overkill. Anyway.
So no mow May and leave the leaves in October and November. Okay.
Both radical ideas. Let's do our part for the earth.
It's a lot easier to just leave it alone.
In the meantime, just get out your lawn chair. That's
well, and it's nice to have these signs because then you think maybe your neighbors won't be so critical of you letting things run amok.
And then also maybe next year they'll have a sign.
It's true.
I put
my Leave the Leaves sign up, and I saw within 6 months one of my neighbors had one up also.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get there yet.
Yep.
We will.
Yep.
Thank you, Mike. That's good.
Absolutely.
No more May. Good. Well, one thing about this time of year, people are putting in gardens, and people always have more plants than they need, and there were a couple of plant events this past weekend.
Saturday was a big day for plant exchanges around
Sharing,
Ames.
Sharing. Yeah, not selling. Oh, you can buy plants, too, but this is some... I bring some and you bring some and we swap. It was good.
Well, it's true. I suppose you don't buy one seed at a time. You buy a whole packet. Now, what if you don't want 35 eggplants for your garden, you know, or something like that?
That's way too many eggplants.
Right. So Mustard Seed Farm, and I think the Romero House, both of which are Catholic worker, situations. So they're really community charities in a lot of ways, and volunteers do a lot. So they had plant swaps, mm-hmm. and it extended also to Helen Gunderson's garden, where she had a plant swap, and somehow she enlisted me to make free pizza. So she in her freezer came out with all kinds of local ingredients, including the tomato sauce that we made last summer, and mm-hmm. Some local mushrooms and some asparagus from, what's Kate's farm's name? The one out of
Root to Rise.
Root to Rise. All kinds of local food showed up, and we made 12 full sheet pans of pizza.
You were working, you were just working away there.
It turned out to be the hottest day we've had so far, right? It was at least 80 degrees. And Helen has two ovens in her kitchen, both of which were set at 500 degrees. It was like, whoa.
So it kind of brought back your old chef days.
Oh, yeah. Well, I plowed through it for about 4 hours, you know, dripping with sweat and spattered with tomato sauce and bacon grease. And it was, yeah, we did it.
It was just fine. And all those pizzas were consumed quite well.
That's right.
Plant seed giveaway. I came away with a few sweet peppers. I like to try different varieties. So I did that. So there's a lot of different varieties of things. I'm always surprised that people think, well, you just have a pepper or you have
peppers,
a tomato.
Zucchini, tomato, right?
They're just as varied as we humans are.
Well, and I like to grow the things that you're never going to be able to buy in the grocery store. That's much more fun.
That's true. Do it yourself and get stuff that you normally wouldn't get. So, today we're going to just, because it's the season, people are still putting some in their garden and looking for that. And basil done. It's a hot weather thing. So
yes,
you really don't
you can
think
only,
of putting it
only
out.
Grow it in the summer, and it is not, it's an annual. You have to start it every year. Now, I have so much shade in my garden that I only have a few little sunny spots. So I try mostly to grow herbs, mm-hmm. so that if I'm cooking, I can run out and snip a little of this, that, and the other. And basil is always a favorite. Now, of course, there's the standard basil that you can buy at the grocery store. It's Genovese basil. Mm-hmm. You know, when you say basil, that's what people think of, right? The kind you make the pesto out of, et cetera, et cetera. But there are lots of kinds of basil. So Lana usually seeds the kinds that you can't buy at the grocery store. So what do you got this year?
Well, since you always ask me for it, and since I've developed a taste for it myself, I like the Thai basils.
That is definitely good if you're making any kind of Asian foods. And, you know, unless you're going to like an ethnic market in Des Moines or something, it's very hard to find.
Right, right.
So you got to grow it yourself. And by the way, all of these, particularly the Thai basil, dries very nicely. So you, at the end of the summer, if you pick it all up and dry it, you can have it year-round.
Yes, you can. Thai basil. Why is it different than regular basil? It tastes deeper.
Tastes like Thai food, huh?
Yeah. It's got a different little tang.
Well, you
to
know,
it.
Like if you go to a Thai restaurant, whatever they're making, at the end, it almost always has lots of chopped herbs. Of course, it's going to have cilantro. It will have basil or Thai basil. It will probably have mint. You know, just chopped fresh on top. So Thai basil is wonderful for that. And you got to grow your own.
Yes, you do. I also, now, some of them are hard to start and don't exactly burst into huge plants right away, but they come eventually. I always plant some lemon basil, and that's doing well,
oh,
too.
Oh, I love lemon basil. Yep. It really is... It tastes, you know, okay, this is basil, but it has a slight little tang
lemony.
To it that's kind of a little more exciting and can be used in almost any recipe where you would use regular basil.
Lemon basil is really lovely, although there are other lemon things in the garden that are good, too. There's some
lemon thyme.
Lemon verbena. Lemon balm, although
lemon,
that's a little sharp.
And none of them... Don't worry, they don't taste like lemon. They're just a little different.
They're a little different, and it's good. So, and there's a couple of different red leaf basils that I like because, again, people ask me what the difference between green basil and red or purple leafed basil
is. Yeah, or sometimes it's called opal basil.
A purple opal basil.
And there's a ruffled leaf opal basil.
It's all very pretty. Some people ask what the difference is, and I it's kind of like the difference between white wine and red wine. You know, green grapes, red. It's basil, but it's darker.
I think with the opal basil, it's It's not a huge flavor difference from the Genovese, but it is, it's a visual thing.
Yeah.
Like if you drop a little fresh chopped into the salad or use it for garnishes, or it's just pretty.
And we do eat with our eyes. And there's also the really small leaf bush basil.
Oh, the globe basil. I like those. I think they have a little more intense flavor to them. I like those.
They're so pretty in the garden. There's so many different kinds. And relatively easy to grow. They do like sunshine. You can grow them in pots, but they do like, they're a summer thing. So get some now and put it in a summer place in your garden. There's many varieties, and it is, basil has been involved with folklore and charms and things for a long time. In Haiti, it's part of the pagan love goddess's headdress, actually. It's a powerful protector. In rural Mexico, it's sometimes carried in pockets because it's supposed to draw money.
So put that in your pocket. Okay.
And also to lure back a lover's roving eye.
Oh, my.
There you go.
Used to be a problem, you know.
Oh, that's a problem. Yeah. This is folklore, of course. It said basil was found growing around Christ's tomb after the resurrection. So some Greek Orthodox churches use it to put it in their holy water and plant it around their church.
Well, there is one called holy basil.
Oh, isn't there? That is. It kind of comes from Southeast Asia. I grow that one too.
Yeah, you put it in teas. I don't use it as a culinary herb.
No.
It has a little funny flavor.
I call it. Taste, it's more like perfume. Mm-hmm. The taste is not good, but that's a personal thing. I don't like the taste of it, but the smell of it is wonderful. And I love to make a green tea mix that includes it because, mm-hmm. and actually, you can find that in some Ayurvedic medicines too.
Yeah, it has, I've forgotten what the qualities are, but it's a pretty well known medicinal herb.
Yes, it is. Good tea that's holy basil or sometimes called Tulsi basil.
Oops, that's right, Tulsi basil.
It looks like regular. Maybe the leaves are a little dustier gray or grayish.
But you can tell by smelling it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So when you're doing herbs, don't just kind of whack at them. Always taste them a little bit first because, like I said, they're like people. They're all
different.
And Lana,
give us your growing tips for how you keep your basil from getting leggy and going to seed.
Yeah. This time of year, you think, oh, I'll never have enough basil. It just won't grow. Believe me, when the hot sunshine hits, it will start growing, and it will keep putting on leaves and putting on leaves. Basil grows by putting leaves, they call it opposite leaves. There's the stem, and there's two leaves that grow out opposite on that stem, and then it goes up a little higher, and another two leaves, a little higher, another two leaves. So use it from the top, and you can cut it back quite.
So you cut the stem above the two-leaf junction, right? And then it'll grow two more directions.
Right.
Right. And that way you're staying ahead of it. Because once it starts to get those spiky flowers and goes to seed, that's not the part you want to eat. No, unless you're collecting your seeds to grow more or something like that.
It gets woody.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to be rather severe with it. You can cut it off quite a lot. Not just the top. You can go right down in. When the plant starts getting about knee high or waist high, go right down in there and go to a two-leaf junction and cut it off.
It will come back.
Right.
So this is one of the herbs. The more you use it, and if you cut it carefully, it will get more productive.
Even better, yes. Oh, what are some other herbs you're looking for?
Well, the mysteries of mint, you know, like I have several kinds of mint in my yard. The only one that I know by name is the fuzzy looking big leaf thing called apple mint.
Right.
The rest of it, I go, what kind of mint is this?
Mint. But that's because mints are, they are quite, loose with their genetic profiles. They cross.
Oh, I thought I was just a culinary dummy with the mints.
Ah, with more than 600 varieties. They hybridize all the time. They're always cross-pollinating. So the best way to select a good plant is by nose rather than by name. Although, yes, I've got some of that big fuzzy stuff, the apple mint. I like that. So that's really
what do you
good.
Do with it? Do you cook with that?
I make a sun tea with that. That's really good in tea, too.
Oh,
I like that a lot.
Okay. Well, I have a lot of that. And then, actually, Helen Gunderson brought me the one that Lana and I call the Helen Gunderson mint because we don't know what it is.
I've got lots of that,
it's really good for cooking.
It is really good.
Really good. So she bought me a big bunch of it, and I've been kind of sticking it in everything, and, you know, it kind of took a little Middle Eastern bent. But, yeah, like I made lamb balls, and I put a lot of fresh chopped mint in them. Really enjoying the mint right now.
Oh,
so, yeah, and the mint will love the rain.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, it'll be really happy this year.
Actually, basil and mint are sort of related. They have a similar pattern of growing, and you can cut back mint like you can cut back basil. I have all the, like you said, my Helen's mint is doing quite well. Thank you, Helen. And I also purchased some what people refer to as chocolate mint.
Oh,
it's got a red stem.
Oh, is
very,
that
very dark leaf. And of course, it doesn't taste like chocolate, but it's good. It's good. So mint is a good
mint. Well, I saw, where was it? At the Hy-Vee where they're selling plants, there was a mojito mint.
Oh.
I was tempted, but I thought, you know, it looks like some of the mints I already have. So it's like, I don't know.
Unless you taste it.
I mean, there's spearmint and peppermint, and apparently there are huge differences with those, but
if you taste them side by side, yes.
But yeah, right. Mint is mint, right?
Right. Also, unlike basil, at least in this climate, mint will return. Mint likes to grow back.
Yes, it is a perennial.
It comes back from a very, very aggressive root system, and it spreads, and so work with that. That's good. If you don't like it, tear it up and take it out of the ground. But
would be a pity, I'm afraid.
No.
Who doesn't like mint?
I don't know what. Well, okay, so if it's growing over there and growing in something that you don't
want. Oh, you want it someplace else because it's
spreads. You can do that, too. You can transfer it. Put it in. But so it will come back
you think of mint as a tea thing. Or even a dessert thing, but, you know, this week I've been cooking with it a lot, with meat and savory, and it cooks down the way a basil does, and it just gives another herbaceous note to it. It doesn't scream mint, it's just really good.
Good. Oh, we've got lots to talk about here, so we'll just kind of shuffle around our outline here, but before we go to a little break, I want to ask you an important question, Donna.
Yes, ma'am.
What is switchel?
Switchel. Okay, there was an article in the New York Times or something, I guess. Washington Post, yeah. So switchel, we must remember that, you know, maybe 100 years ago or more, people didn't have ready access to, like, lemons and citrus and sour things. So instead of drinking lemonade, they made, one of the things that they made was called switchel. It's also known as harvest drink, harvest beer, haymaker's punch, and something else called swanky. Switchel is a new world take on a basic beverage that has been around for millennia, and it is a sweetener, which can be honey, sugar, molasses even. Vinegar is the main thing. Water and ginger. So it's ginger that makes it a switchel rather than a, what's the thing that Joe's always making?
Shrubs,
right. So it's the ginger. And it's very thirst quenching. And the article in the Post was talking about, because that tartness is, you know, is the same as lemonade, whether people really liked it, especially on plantations, you know, because when you have a lot of people working in the field, whether it's, you know, hay making or sugar plantations or anything, you got to keep hydrated, right? So they were saying in the article that there were times when rum was the cheapest thing to hydrate with, right? However, it reduces productivity, right?
Really? You think so?
Yeah. Oh. So they were really, when the planters realized that they could make a beverage with ginger and vinegar, you know, an inexpensive beverage that was like, it was like the Gatorade of, you know, the colonial era or something like that. Cheap and plentiful. And you can use whatever sweeteners, like in the north, they used maple syrup or sorghum in the south and honey in the west. And, so you can make your own switchel. Just put in, you know, some, either grate in some ginger or powdered ginger and vinegar to taste and honey and, or sugar, any, so mix it as strong as you like, and it's a thirst-quenching, I guess it must help with electrolytes or something.
Before people knew what electrolytes
better than Gatorade, okay? There's, you know, you don't have to add any of that neon green coloring to it.
Right. I like the name anyway.
Yeah, Switchel.
A summer drink, a summer drink. This is KHOI Community Radio. And this is the Donalana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Donalana. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. I want to remind you that you can become a member of this fine radio station. This is community radio. Go to khoifm.org/membership and support this fine effort. We're on the air because of support from members and from listeners like you. So, another thing that's happening, besides the garden kind of waking up and doing good things, mushrooms, Donna, mushrooms.
Well, it's because we got rain.
Oh, now I, as far as my sort of half-hearted mushroom gathering, I didn't have very good luck with morels this year. It was very dry when I consider morels kind of at their peak, and I looked and I found a few, and
well, maybe they'll be late this year.
Oh, I don't know,
because the rain.
Well, I don't know. I'll look, but I doubt it. Well, we'll see. However, I had neighbors that found, believe, get this, we found mushrooms underneath the hostas on the north side of the house. Now,
I'm going to ask you how you happened to find
them. Well, I didn't, but my neighbor Megan is just, she has an eagle eye. She finds things all the time. She was looking down there. You know, she's the kind of person that can find like like arrowheads and four-leaf clovers. And she just, and so she looked down there, and believe it or not, underneath some hostas and underneath some daylilies, there were just gorgeous mushrooms. And come to find out...
Morels. Yeah.
Come to find out, last year, what we figured out happened was that a good bunch of morels that were picked last year were cleaned off on the porch, and the mushroom dust was dumped on top of that. So never think that you can't find morels in the strangest of places. So we found some. But I want to talk about another kind of mushroom here. Golden oysters, they seem to be becoming more and more prevalent here. I'm finding a lot. And I found oyster mushrooms are the kind that usually grow on a log. They
In abundance.
And they're usually kind of tan. But golden oysters are gold, which makes them really easy to find in the woods. They're called
yellow. Very
yellow.
Bright yellow.
Right. They're called a functional mushroom, which means they have health benefits besides their nutritional value. They have high antioxidant value and contain nutrients like potassium, zinc, protein, fiber, vitamin B5, and other good stuff. And they also are good for dealing with high cholesterol and blood pressure levels. But I just eat them because they're good. They're good. I find them on downed logs, often in bunches, because they don't just put up one head. They put up many fingers, and each one of those fingers.
Right. Last year, she had so many, and she's a good mushroom hunter. And she has woods, right?
Woods help.
So she would get so many that even she had overflow, and I was the beneficiary of... There's nothing more fun than having so many mushrooms that you really let it dominate. You know, it's not like, oh, you put a few mushrooms on your pasta. You end up putting a little pasta on your mushrooms. So there were so many. They were delicious. So now she's brought some in that she's dried.
These golden oysters.
I'm dry, crunching them.
Dry. Very well. I just have.
They're like potato chips.
Yeah.
Mm. They're so good.
The gold color goes away a little bit, but mm-hmm. they dry beautifully. They last forever in a tightly sealed jar. And what is nice about the golden, and I found this in my reading about it too. Some mushrooms, when you dry them, and you can dry all of them, need to be rehydrated either in oil or water to use them because they're, you know, kind of turn into these tough little things. But if you dry mushrooms in your recipes, you can just use these dried oyster mushrooms right out of the jar because they dry delicately. You
can, right, they're like chips.
Eating them out of the jar. Out of the jar, they're like chips. And
if you put a little salt, I could stop eating potato chips and just be eating mushrooms.
They're very good. They're very good. So
now, there's a small problem with them, right?
Yeah.
They're invasive species.
There is talk, and there are people discussing this, that perhaps the reason we have so many of these golden oyster mushrooms in our woods now is that so many people have gotten interested in growing these home mushroom kits where you can purchase.
Right, because the oysters are very popular because they grow readily.
Yeah, they grow readily. And there is a conversation that the foraging community are finding so many golden oysters because they're invasive, and they're kind of worried that these golden oysters might be, who knows for mushrooms, we have a lot to find out, but they might be competing with morels and other mushrooms. The pheasant bag mushrooms are out now this time of year. I'm finding those too, the big plattery looking things that with spotty backs.
Now, how do you...
But they're worried that the golden oysters might be invasive.
How do you pick the platter ones before they become hard as a...
It's leather. It's really hard. I mean, if you catch one, you're doing good. I don't go out every single day. If I happen to find one that is soft to the touch and bendable, I can use it. Otherwise, it turns into a very pretty very pretty ornament, but it's really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're
but,
like
but
leather.
These golden oysters, they stay soft and good, and I rather
enjoy. Yeah,
they're
really easy to cook with.
And oysters actually come in lots of colors. There's a blue oyster mushroom, there's a pearl oyster mushroom, a pink oyster mushroom, and there's one called a king oyster, which is not quite as golden, but there you go. So enjoy them, and if you eat lots of them, that's probably a good thing, because if they're invasive, well, let's just eat them all up.
And they're good for you. So there.
They are a good flavor.
Yeah, that's called a win-win, right?
when I just, to dry them, they are these flat, well, classic mushroom-looking top on a stem. I cut off the stem. The stem is hard. You can probably deal with it, too, but I just use the tops. And I put it in my food dryer. I have a Necci food dryer, N-E-C-C-I, something like that, Necci. And just turn it on medium-ish, and it takes a long time. Make sure they are crispy dry. You don't want to put them away when there's any chance of there being moisture in them. But these will last, well, many, many months in a dark space, and they go into a lot of things. What a nice thing to add to a soup or pasta sauce or something. Mushrooms. Mushrooms, yes. I'm kind of glad I found
all right, and things. I see in our notes here that you have ticks listed.
Oh, wait, things to talk about.
So you were out mushrooming and you
ticks,
saw the ticks.
And ticks. Mm. Now, I mentioned that because before this big rain, I was gathering ticks like mushrooms, I tell you. I was coming in not dozens, but I have learned to be very cognizant of little funny crawly feelings on my legs and on my arms, and I can
even on your scalp sometimes.
Be careful. Ticks are not good, and check your pets too. But ticks, actually, after this bit of rain, they do not that they go away. They I think they just get washed down the river a little bit, but ticks really like it dry. They're just happy in the grass. And well, I'm out in the garden a lot too. And of course, when I'm in the garden and I'm weeding or planting, I just sit on my butt and plant. I don't, bend over or anything. And so I have a lot of contact with the ground. So I have learned to be cognizant of ticks and get one while they're still crawling. If so happens that you have a tick that gets embedded and
into your skin.
Into your skin. Don't yank it off really fast. What I do is take a hold of it and hold it and pull very, very, very gently. It could take half a minute and it will back up. If you can't get it to back up, you can touch it with a match head, but I try not to do that because I don't like match heads either. A burning match, that's not good. But after I have taking the tick out and make sure that I have pulled the head out along with the rest of it, I make sure to touch that with a little iodine or mercurochrome or some sort of antiseptic something or other. I have never had any problems with a bad reaction, but
People do, yeah, though,
people
and it's
do.
Apparently
be careful.
A huge problem. So
be careful. Oh, my goodness, yes. Well, what else? Oh, yes. So golden oyster mushrooms. And actually, as I recall, unlike morels, golden oysters kind of hang around for a while, depending on the weather and because we've had a bunch of storms. I have a lot of downed logs that I can be checking. So do that and find yourself somebody who really knows mushrooms to go walk in the woods with, to make sure you're getting the right thing. But
it can be confusing. Like I rely on, if Lana picked it, I'll eat it. My own judgment, I look at it and go, yeah, that's really interesting. But I wonder if that's what Lana would pick, so.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah,
everything I learned about mushrooms, I learned from Ben Hawks, who is a very good forager, and thanks to Ben for teaching me. And again,
it is a good thing for oral traditions. You really need to go a few times with somebody who knows what they're doing and look at them and understand it. And it's a delightful thing if you've learned it properly.
Yeah, and while you're out there, there's wildflowers. The Jack and the Pulpits are... just my way of timing things. When Jack and the Pulpits are starting to make their little flowers, their Jacks in the pulpit sitting there, I figure morels are over. Because you're kind of in the beginning of a warm green woods, and it's kind of beyond morel season, but other mushrooms are going fine. And I read someplace, Jack in the Pulpits can be, they are the seeds, the red seeds are poisonous. Be careful. Don't eat them. But some other, maybe this, Alan de Burgo talked about it. Somebody that you can eat parts of the Jack in the Pulpit, but since parts of it are poisonous, I think I'll just give it a wide berth.
Let them grow.
Let them grow, and remember that they are really, really pretty. So
I think as a child, it was the first wildflower whose name I was taught, because it really, you look at it, you see the little Jack in the Pulpit, and it really sticks in your childhood brain.
Yes, yes. And another thing that looks like Jack, well, the top of it does, May apples. May apples have that same kind of, looks like an umbrella on the top.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember May apples being quite prolific when I was growing up in Wisconsin. I see them every so often here, but not in bunches. And yes, they really, May, they grow in May. And yes, they produce a little apple, a little fruit underneath.
Do they also grow under oak trees? Is that something about that? They're a shady thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what I know of woods lore is, well, I go out there and I ask somebody, but it's nice to discover new things. Yes, it is. Well, this is KHOI, and I want to remind you that you can find out more and become a member of this fine radio station by going to www.khoifm.org/membership, and you can find out about KHOI. You can find out about the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, which has been around forever and a day, Donna.
Oh, at least 10 years. That's a pretty long time.
Well, actually, we officially started in 2015, but we had a few shows before that. And we're kind of making it up as we go along, but we really appreciate it. Like Donna said earlier, we like to share important things that you can do for yourself and your health and your well-being. Nothing like talking about food.
Well, and being here in the, we always say, we're in the middle of the middle, and I like to call it the belly of the beast, because this is, it could be, and it has been, a large food-producing region. We have some of the finest soils on the planet. Of course, we're not producing food with them, even though farmers are told that they are feeding the world. We're making ethanol and animal food and
high fructose
corn syrup and all that soybean meal for CAFOs, but we are capable of producing a lot of food. And so the issues that we talk about, food and food systems and the politics of food on the Donna Lana Kitchen, a lot of it is actually going on right under our noses here in Iowa. And the latest kerfluffle is Iowa has turned out to have the fastest growing cancer rate in the nation. Hello, wake up call.
It is.
And this has to do with our food system and the crops that we grow on the land and the agrochemicals that are applied to make those bountiful crops.
Because I think too many of us worry about getting money from those bountiful crops as opposed to getting bountiful crops to feed people. So,
well, we don't want to blame the farmers. It's actually all of the middlemen that are, producing the chemicals and the systems and the, and are then buying the, it's not that the farmers are making all of this money. In fact, the farmers have to be subsidized by the government to stay in business, basically. So somebody, some large middle people in the food production system are the ones that are driving the whole system the way it's functioning. It's not us eaters that really want all of this stuff. And it's probably not the farmers. They just need to make a living at the jobs that they do.
I ran across an interesting statistic, and of course I'm racking my brain for it, but at the turn of the last century, in the early 1900s, farmers were getting 40% of the food dollars.
I saw an article recently that even higher, 74% in Maine, an early Secretary of Agriculture discovered that. And now we're down to what? 7%?
Yeah.
Of the price that, of the end product, only 7% actually goes back to the farmer.
So things change, of course. The dollar buys more, buys less. But think about that, and think about all this is related to food that goes into our bodies.
Which we all need. Food is a really necessary thing.
And speaking of food, Donna, tell folks about our podcast.
We have a podcast of the Donna Lana Kitchen, so it's the same content that is on the radio, but in case you prefer a format where you podcasting. It's the thing. Just wherever you listen to your podcasts, type in Donna Lana. That's one word. D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A. Second word, kitchen, and it will pop right up there.
Okay. Well, let's have some more thoughts on green things and spring. Yes. Well, we're thinking about things that we can harvest just by
now. Not in August, now. But now.
We're talking seasonal greens here. Donna, talk about nettles.
Well, they're everywhere, especially with the good wet weather.
Your ankles will tell you if you wear sandals and shorts, you'll find nettles.
Right. So they're called stinging nettles because they sting a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's not something you want to pick in the wild without gloves. I mean, it doesn't sting that badly. In fact, there are times when stinging nettles, they used to be used medicinally, like if you say you had arthritis in your hands and wrists, so you would take some stinging nettles and kind of flip the nettles against those areas because that encouraged circulation from the sting, basically. So it's not something you want to voluntarily do. So take your gloves out into the woods, cut off just the tender tops, and, nettles have a good, people make tea out of it just because it's mildly pleasant flavor, and it has medicinal qualities. For example, it's very good for allergies. I actually take a lot of stinging nettle in herbal capsules just for my allergies.
Oh, really?
It's really good. It makes a good, so we have a soup recipe here from the Alan Burgos book, Flora. It's called The Forager Chef's Book of Flora. And he does one interesting thing. So it's nettle tops, and then celery, onion, leek or shallots, butter, a quarter cup of long grain rice, a quarter cup of dry white wine, 4 cups of chicken stock, 1/2 cup of heavy cream. But so what he does is, and all of the nettle soup recipes do this, you quickly blanch the nettles in boiling water. That takes the sting out of them. And then you put them in cold water to stop the cooking. Otherwise, nettles turn this kind of gray, green. It's not terrible, but it's not appealing. Whereas if you blanch them, you keep the bright green color. Now he's managed to make this soup so it still has the bright green color. And he does that by putting the nettle tops aside and cooking everything else. And then, and he says he uses, rice to thicken it rather than potato.
Oh, rice flour or rice?
No, 1/4 cup of long grain rice. So you have to cook it enough, the rest of the ingredients, the onions, the shallots, yeah, the white wine, and the chicken stock, until the rice is soft enough so that when you puree it, the rice is the thickener. Ha. So then after he's made the base of the soup, then he puts the nettles in and purees it all. And then he cools it one more time again. So to keep the greenness in the nettles, you have to quickly chill it, the whole thing, in a basin of like ice water. Ha. It's a little more complicated, but it comes out a beautiful, beautiful color.
Great.
Also, nettles can just be, usually they're blanched so that you can handle them, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you take the leaves off after you've blanched them and chopped them up, you can put them in any kind of soup, mm-hmm, as you would a green, mm-hmm, any other greens. And they're good for you.
They are.
And they're ubiquitous right now.
Good. At our house, we tried a nettle soup that it probably didn't have to worry so much about the green because it has got some tomato stock in it, which kind of...
Oh, like a minestrone kind of thing.
Yeah, it was really good. It's an Italian nettle soup. It was quite tasty. Yes, it is. So nettles. Oh, we ran across this good idea, too, for... for nettles. If you break the structure of the leaf veins, if you roll them with a rolling pin, that also...
Oh, I forgot we did that.
Also takes away the sting.
How did we do that?
You kind of, with your gloves, strip off the leaves, dump them on the kitchen counter, use a rolling pin, and squash them a little bit. And then you can quickly saute them.
Oh, yeah, that released the stinging...
The stingy bits. Elements.
Yeah, huh? Right. I forgot about that, Lana. That was on a show a few years ago.
See, we learn things from doing this show. Yes, we do. I was, you know, I've learned so much stuff from Donna. Yes, I have.
And see, I've forgotten it, so now she reminds me. Conveniently.
And, yeah, often I would return to things. And you can find out more about our show going to KHOI website, and we've got a web page there. There's a picture of us. But there also is a listing of past shows. What kind of things have you, to 10 years, is there something that stands out? Is there a show that you thought was really fun? I love some of the guests we've had, but what do you remember?
What do I remember? It's a big blur.
It's all a blur.
Like every week when we figure out what we're going to do in the show, we go, did we do that already? Because we try to do it seasonally. So, you know, I'm sure we've talked about nettles before because happens every spring.
Of course.
You know, and... So it's seasonal and cyclical, and then of course we have a lot of wonderful food activists that we've had over the years on the show. Some of them from all over the country, some fairly prominent people and people who have written books and, you know, all kinds of things like that.
I remember one of the very first things that I recorded when I was learning how to use a remote, a CAS cam, a remote recorder. Vandana Shiva came to ISU to give
a
speech.
Right.
And me, I never did this before, but as a member of the press, I kind of shuffled my way forward and I interviewed her a little bit, and she did an on-air spot for our radio, for our fundraiser, and what a nice, I mean, that is an internationally known food person.
Right, she is an Indian woman who is a brilliant food activist, and was one of the first people in India to support the farmers in their complaints against the large chemical companies. Yep. Who were, I mean, India at that time, and maybe this is still true, has a high farmer suicide rate, and how they commit suicide, they drink the pesticides. It's just horrible. So Vandana has been dealing with these issues for a long time, which were international, and she was at ISU for a lecture, and she has numerous books and is a
food
kind,
sovereignty.
Brilliant
food
soul. Yep.
It's good. Oh, I also remember one of our most fun and favorite and messy shows that we did in the studio a long, long time ago was we compared cherry pitters. We pitted cherries on the air. Boy, Donna, did we ever make a mess.
Well, yeah, and a lot of noise to it. And we're going to have a good cherry season again this year.
Oh,
so
I hope so.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to replay that one. It was really good sound effects.
Great sound effects. I won't bring a cherry pitter in front of a microphone again, because I think now that I know more about radio, it was kind of an iffy thing to do. It was kind of messy. Yes, it was kind of messy. Well, I want to thank you again for your support as listeners to the Donna Lena Kitchen and listeners and supporters of this fine radio station. Next week on our show, we're going to be talking to a couple of young women who have a local community farmers market project happening on the west side of Ames at Reliable Street. We'll be talking to them. It'll be fun. So join us. You've been listening to the Donna Lena Kitchen. We come to you every Tuesday at noon. Live, Donna. Yes,
warts and all, right?
Yeah. We have a good time doing this. And we also have music by the Barn Owl Banda, also local and very live band. Today we had a tune called New Chinkapin Hunting, written by Brad Johnson, a Barn Owl Band member. Also, you can find us here on the radio every Tuesday at noon. We repeat it at 7 p.m.
I'm not going to ask you what a new chinkapin is.
It's a chinkapin is an oak tree. See, I learned things. I looked it up. I looked it up. Yes, I did. So support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Noctica.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We've had fine engineering, as always, by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.